Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, ladies and gents. That time again. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici, bringing you the inside track on health. That is my mission. A little education makes your choices easy. Today we're going to go after one of the more prominent choices, and that is which diet for you to become, which diet for you to subscribe to. So many out there. The truth is there aren't so many out there. If you understand the basic principles of science, and we could say of dietary science, if you understand those basic principles, then you can see that basically most of your dietary choices are just playing around with a couple of basic physiological principles. If you'll take the time, especially today, to understand these principles, well, then I think you'll navigate your course more easily with less stress. Those of you who are down, unfortunately, chronically ill, have maybe had a decade or two of your life taken away, not optimized in your existence, that sort of thing, well, this becomes an even more pressing issue. And so rather than just skirt from fad to fad to fad and book to book to book and YouTube clip from YouTube clip and flip a coin and pray, I urge you to try to understand the science. It revolves around two words. And I've mentioned these in the past on the show, but really going to take a look at them today more deeply. Anabolism and catabolism. Those words, in more serious science, catabolism and anabolism mean much because they dictate the two ways that your body utilizes the energy that it makes from food. Catabolism being breakdown, anabolism being synthesis or buildup. And the way to look at your body is that it's in a constant state of either breaking down stuff that it needs to break down for energy or synthesizing stuff that it needs to synthesize for repair and to rebuild. Now, if you really get into the meaning and the implications of that, dietary science becomes extremely clear. But let's just start with two, I think, very contrasted ways of approaching your dietary choices. One is this paleo thing. Now, we're all using the word paleo, fortunately or unfortunately, because of a book that's come out over the past few years called The Paleo Diet. The truth is, the paleo diet, yes, it's got some modifications that are specific unto itself, but the concept of making the carbs very low, bringing up the fats, and moderating the proteins, the animal proteins, has been around for a long time, much longer than paleo. And of course, there's been this little dance about should you do dairy, should you not do dairy, should the meat be raw or cooked? What's the ratio between the carbs, the fats, and the animal protein? And as people vary those things and attach their name to a new book, throw their credentials down, have seminars, time their message beautifully, get endorsement from other people, well, then you see these variations occur. But basically, when you're looking at very animal-heavy diets, in other words, the ones that endorse the animal protein, in addition to that, like the Weston Price Institute, those ketogenic people that will endorse dairy, okay? Again, paleo doesn't. But whether you're into dairy or not, the animal protein-based diets tend to be very important for people who have to build tissue. And what you there in the audience must understand about disease states is that for a multitude of reasons, you have suffered from the fact that you have become cachexic. That's another word that just means weak, disintegrated, puny, without flesh. And there's a multitude of reasons from that. We're not going to get into those reasons, but many people in debilitating states of health are in a state of cachexia. This is where they've been breaking down, in that their catabolizing processes, their breakdown processes, have crossed an unreasonable line, and they're basically, well, emaciated. And we all know that. That's common sense. We see people in different stages of disease, and we see they're not healthy. There's no muscle or meat on the bone. They look gaunt. Their color's not good, so on and so forth. So you understand that. You know what cachexia and catabolism looks like. Out there in the vegan community, when people are not doing vegetarianism or veganism correctly, and again, I cite that as opposed to correctly versus incorrectly. When vegetarianism or veganism is not done correctly, people will also look emaciated, gaunt, not healthy, almost like they've got a disease, but they don't. So you already understand cachexia. You already understand, in a sense, when a catabolic process has overridden anabolic processes. When you're 20 years old and you're kind of out of shape and your muscles are kind of puny and you decide to get healthy, hit the track, hit the gym, do all those wonderful things you do for your health and hone yourself, sculpt yourself into the picture of health. Bottom line is you've shunted yourself into an anabolic phase. You've moved from a more catabolic to an anabolic phase, and you look like you're sprouting. Puberty. Would you call puberty? Think of your puberty, your children's puberty, your grandchildren's pubic phases, when every time you turn around, they're another inch taller, their muscles are another inch thicker, their voices are much deeper. Would you call that catabolism? No, you wouldn't. You'd say they're in a sprouting, anabolic synthesis phase. So you understand these things. Now, this is the secret. This is where the rubber hits the road. And I'll put it to you in a single Medici sentence, as I often do, to hopefully give you an essence understanding of the big picture. The art in the deal of bringing yourself out of chronic symptomology or disease states. I'm talking to you, my specialty, people who have had years of their life taken away and they're just not well. You may even hobble to work, pay your rent and bills, but you have no quality of life. Or people worse than that can't work. They lie in a room. They've got a certain amount of energy per day. They count exactly the number of chores they can participate in each day, and then that's it. And that's the way they've lived for 2, 5, 10 years. When you're like that, the secret out of that hole is to vary catabolism with anabolism in the correct way. The secret to getting yourself out of disease states is to sensitize yourself. And I mean, you have to attenuate the nervous system. You have to become more body-centered. You have to learn to listen with more impunity to the messages that your body is sending to you. Once done, what you're really doing is varying a catabolic diet with an anabolic diet, with a catabolic diet with an anabolic diet, at no one's ratio, but the ratio that your body demands. In other words, you blend anabolism with catabolism, specific to where you're at in your life at this present moment. Now, we're going to expand on this, but understand, no matter what your dietary choice is, you're varying the ability of that diet to compel you to break down tissue versus the ability of that diet or dietary shift to compel your body to begin to synthesize tissue. And moving yourself through the labyrinth of health from disease to health is a variation in that sequence. And you have to call upon the higher intelligence of your body. Something outside your analytical abilities. Something larger. Something deeper. Something more compelling. And really what you call a healing is stacked on the back of your ability to streamline that listening process. If you could only understand this. I well concede that for as much as you may be nodding your head, the real meaning of this is only to be borne out through experience. You can't really understand what I'm talking about unless you begin to experience it. If a doctor has any role, it's to supervise your listening abilities. Isn't that odd? If a doctor has any real role, it's to supervise the process through which you attune yourself to the messages that your body's giving you. Isn't that counterintuitive? Isn't that so different from what we really call doctor or medicine or healing? For most people, healing is that thing that you do based upon some choice, and then it works. And then you say, I tried it and it works and I'm happy and I'm healed. This is nonsense. That's not what happens. What brings you from a chronic diseased state to health is an attunement of your listening faculty. And this is so neurologically bound. This is so connected to your nervous system. Centers in your brain and your spinal cord and your peripheral nerves, mediated through the chakras or the nerve plexuses, become more refined in their attunement to the signals that the body's asking you to interpret. For those of you new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. No, you will not hear a show like this in the United States. You certainly will not. I can say that without doubt over two decades. Get on my website, straighttalk.cc, not.com.cc. Don't just sit there and be entertained. Do something for yourself. Many who listen are ill. And doing nothing, unfortunately, intelligently. It's not your fault unless you turn your back on education. You have to get that concept. Get to the website. Many of you still listen on the radio solely. Please get to the website so you can look at the pictures. The pictures enhance your understanding. If you're driving, get to the website when you get home. Let's talk about a name here, Ann Wigmore. Ann Wigmore. Some of you know the name Ann Wigmore. Some of you may know the name Brian Clement. Some of you may know that name. Some of you may know the name Hippocrates Institute in Florida. Some of you may know the name Wheatgrass. Some of you may know the name Sprouting. Some of you may know the name Hooked on Raw, by a woman named Rio. Certain any client of mine knows the name Rio, R-H-I-O, the book Hooked on Raw. These are the vegan-esque eaters. But they're a special class of veganites, meaning no dairy, no animal protein, and just they're plant-based people. And some of you know that name, but lots of you don't understand that really the hijacking of vegetarianism occurs because you cannot get enough nutrient into your body. This is the issue with vegans and vegetarians. They can't get enough nutrition in because they're eating their plant matter in more indigestible forms and with low nutrition per unit mass of their vegetarian fare. Sprouting solved this problem. This is a concept a medical doctor named Joel Fuhrman sort of supports. He talks about macronutrient vegetarianism. Very important concept. But I want to stick to the name Ann Wigmore, Hippocrates Institute. Why? Because these people from Ann Wigmore way back, decades ago, founded hordes of people connected to nature who sprout their foods, who use wheatgrass juice, but who cook their foods, prepare their foods from scratch. Not health food stores, not vegetarian restaurants, from scratch. These are the hardcore grassroots vegan slash vegetarian types. And the reason I want to cite them and I want to share them with you in stark contrast to the paleo diet is because if you were down there at the Hippocrates Institute watching the changes in the health statuses of people who take this kind of lifestyle up and count the number of people who have moved themselves out of cancer, out of heart disease, and into radiant health, it would shock you. It would shock you in a wonderful way. It would amaze you. In other words, rather than write a book about your healing, rather than get on the radio or the TV or whatever, I can tell you that these communities of sprouters and Wigmorites, Hippocrates Institute type eaters, if you study their statistics, if you've been around there, if you talk to people who work there, you verify, like a great historian would verify, reality of occurrence against mass marketing and nonsense and sensationalism and people that write books that suggest healings that never occur and all the garbage that's out there in the media. If you really go into the kitchens and the communities of the sprouters, you will meet, as I have, a remarkable number of people who have healed serious disease. And this is what Brian Clement and Ed Wigmore, Colvinoscus, a whole bunch of these famous sprouter types have claimed over the decades. They have made a real contribution. And what I want you to understand is what, in terms of the physiology, in the essences of it, is actually going on. So let's just take a look at sprouting first of all. If you can go to picture 11, what you're going to look at, actually a better picture of that if you can, if not, just listen. Better picture is actually picture number 15. Picture 15, you're taking a seed, and that seed is planted. Now, what is the seed? The seed, obviously, is what grows into a plant. But the seed is given a mass of nutrient to feed the growing plant. So if you want to talk about a concentration of nutrient in a part of a plant, go to the seed. When we talk about sprouting, we take the seed, which is put into the soil in a protective coat. So although a seed of any type of plant, so if you're sprouting a pea, if sprouting some sort of a bean, if you're sprouting corn, sprouting a lentil, think of any little vegetarian nugget, so to speak, and picture it as its seed in the soil. And what you want to understand is that seed is sort of a dual reality in that it's got a massive concentration of nutrient, but at the same time, to protect itself so that it can grow into a plant, that seed is in an indigestible form. It has all sorts of chemicals inside the seed which prevent adequate digestion. It has a coat that fights and resists the ability of your body to break that down. Now, what the sprouters did And I put some of the great books on sprouting. Again, that book Hooked on Raw by Rio. Again, the book on Sprouting by Ann Wigmore. There's lots of them out there. But those two names stand out. What the sprouters did is wait for the seed to begin to what we call germinate, meaning when the seed begins to go into its latter stages of development, but before it becomes a plant. Believe it or not, as it becomes a plant, there's a certain point at which it disperses its energy. And it loses concentration of nutrient. It's a fascinating thing the sprouters do. They pick the mid-range between seed and plant. Thus, when what they call the plumule, or that little green leaf, begins to appear in varying degrees above the soil, as the seed germinates, meaning develops, that's when they pick the plant for ingestion, mid-range. And what that accords them is the seed breaks down its impenetrable coat, and at the same time, it still concentrates massive amounts of nutrient. Now, here's where it gets strange. When you start eating sprouted foods, weird stuff happens to your body, but good weird. And when I say good weird, what I mean is, if you try to measure just from the nutritional standpoint, the nutrient in a sprouted seed, well, you'll be impressed. Per unit mass and against the weight of it, it's chocked full of vitamin, no shortage of mineral. And yes, you have to qualify the source. The soil has to be quite fertile. That in itself is its own field of study. But the point is, across the board, a sprouted seed renders the consumer a degree of vital force that doesn't equate to biochemical assay. Now, I just said a mouthful with that statement. It means when you measure chemically what's in a sprouted seed against the consumer's sense of energy they receive, it doesn't add up. There's a difference between the two. And so what the sprouters like Wigmore and the sprouters like Clement start to talk is this vernacular that sounds esoteric. It sounds a little weird to people. Sounds goofy. But it's not. It's not at all. They're talking about something we don't have the technology to fully measure yet. And that is the electrical force of food. Make no mistake about it. You take an orange off an orange tree when that orange is ripe on a bright, sunny California morning, and you pull that orange from the tree just at the right time and slice it open and eat that orange, and you compare that to that orange you buy in the supermarket that may have been picked ripe, but that's been sitting in storage for however long it's been, you're looking at two different oranges. Hunters who eat their kill within hours, days. Animals that eat their kill within seconds are getting something larger from the food than we as chemists can measure. Denny Heistand, D-E-N-I-E, H-E-I-S-T-A-N-D, Electrical Nutrition, farmer in New Zealand. Read that book, Electrical Nutrition. The biophysics of food is what we're on the fringe of understanding. Biophysics. You may need more education to appreciate it, but you took physics, you heard of physics, you understand waves of energy, you understand electrons, you understand ray guns, you understand the force, I mean, it's everywhere. A electromagnetic perception of the power of an entity versus biochemistry, stuff you can measure with agreed upon laws. You meet somebody and it's not how handsome or beautiful they are. It's not how much money they have. It's not anything you can put your finger on. There's just some vibration that comes off them that affects you. That's biophysics. That's what we're talking about. We call this charisma. We say the electrical field of a Christian saint is massive. We say through systematic training, the electrical field has been purified and it shoots miles across. We understand that in the everyday language of our time, but we don't apply this to food. Ann Wigmore does. Brian Clement does. Consequently, there's something about sprouting of food that's bigger than its biochemistry. And I put on the wall here, books on sprouting. Now, if you eat a vegan diet with macronutrient foods of high electrical force, it's not quite a fast. You can't really call it a fast if you've done a water fast or a pure juice fast. But it will push you into catabolism. Yes, I always tie the pieces together. If you begin drinking hordes of wheatgrass juice, sprouting your foods, maybe fermenting a bit, pickled cabbages and pickled vegetables, this is all part of vegan fare, to enhance the nutrition. Get your fats from no more than nuts and seeds, which have enough of the omega-3s, if you know how to do it. Rio's book on seed cheeses. Take a nut out of a shell grown in a perfect ecosystem. Take the nut, grind it up in a Vitamix, mix it with coconut water or a few other things, whatever you want. Read the book and take that broth, that muddy mixture of the nut, the oil in the nut, and what you ground it in, put it in a cheesecloth, lay it over a dish, and let the bacteria in the air ferment the nut, meaning eat part of the nut. Break it down. So what's in the nut that you can't digest deactivates, and then the bacteria in the air break the nut down. That nut is now called a nut cheese. This is how the sprouters, I'm going to call them the sprouters. I have the utmost respect for their way of approaching their vegetarian lifestyle because they have gone after the macronutrient aspect. This is what a lot of your vegetarians fail to do. And I mean good vegetarians, and I mean vegetarians who have knowledge, but they miss this macronutrient point. I think this is kind of what Joel Fuhrman has tried to point out, and I think that needs to be respected. Now, that nut now is like drinking omega-3. It's an IV infusion because that will assimilate into your body in a way no regular nut will. And basically, if you look at the sprouters, they're taking their fats in highly digestible forms. They're getting massive amounts of vitamin and mineral. And on top of it, there's some, and here's the key. It's not the side note. It's the key. They're eating foods of high electrical force. We'll get to wheatgrass later. High electrical force. Now, the genius of this is that it feeds the body enough nutrition. It's kind of like a modified fast almost. But what it compels you to do is go into catabolism. it will force catabolic purges. In other words, the body will take the nutrition in and say in transition, you know what? This is a little much. I need to digest myself to accord this new sort of food choice. Macronutrients and all, electrical force and all. What the body will do is shift to a catabolic state. Now, what do you need to do when you have a disease? There is one aspect to digging yourself out of a disease that's critical, and that is you have to digest yourself. Because somewhere along the line, your chemistry has altered optimal structure, whether you're dying of scars, meaning whether your disease has scarred tissue that would otherwise have regenerated, or the cell is just in a dilapidated senescent state, or whether you're loaded in the organ itself with mass deposits of necrotic garbage tissue mixed in with dead immune system cells. Regardless of what the muck of you is in a disease state, you must respect this catabolic purging that the vegan lifestyle, that the sprouter lifestyle will initiate. I want you to listen to the show again and again and again and again and again. You need to understand what I'm talking about. If you're sick, chronically debilitated, if you're just got chronic symptomology and are finding it difficult to function in an optimal form, you have to understand what I'm talking about. I feel bad for a lot of you guys. I really do. I know what it is to watch somebody heal in illness. And I have never seen in my life one example of people who get out of the hole, the solitary confinement of illness. I never see anyone get out without a real war. A healing is a journey. And I feel bad for people. Because what their version of the processes and the reality of it have nothing to do with each other. It's not your fault. It's not anybody's fault, but it is the reality. What it takes people to heal, what it really takes people to heal, and what they think it's going to take to heal have nothing to do with each other. That's why you got to listen to this show. There are concepts deep, mired deep, buried deep in the guts of healing that you have to understand. One of them is, if you're sick, you have to respect the fact that in part, you have to break your body down. Now, breaking your body down, initiating a catabolic phase, however critical, has to be done with sophistication. Why? Because if you fail at it, you'll hurt yourself. You'll starve to death. This is why most people can't go about healing disease fasting. Because when you fast, you initiate a catabolism that's more than a sickly body can handle. And that has to be respected, too. The sprouters, deliberately, inadvertently, I don't know, have fallen upon this. Now, the other thing that a lot of the sprouters do, and again, please don't sit there, what do I do? How do I eat like this? That's all over YouTube. Man, if you're not using the computer in 2017... please, you can't go to the library anymore. I'm saying this because I know a lot of people still don't use computers. After the age of 50, 60, a lot of people are not doing it. It's like tension. How many people have tension in the pit of their stomach when they have to go look something up on a computer? It's the truth. Bottom line, all you have to do, just go to Hippocrates Institute on YouTube. You'll see hundreds. You'll get the gist of this stuff. But you have to understand the perspective, or you don't know how to integrate it into you. Now, the other thing that the Sprouters do, and Wigmore did, and Clement does, is they get into wheatgrass. Let me tell you about wheatgrass. Number one, don't eat powdered forms of it. And I don't want to knock anybody's products. Some people are making fantastic products. Of course, Premier Research Labs, beyond fantastic. The best you can find. But bottom line, something happens when things become powders. There is a difference in the electrical force of a food when you grow it, harvest it, put it in a manual wheatgrass maker, turn the handle, and watch that dark green, verdant, slightly sweet, concentrated nuclear bomb of nutrition drop into that 1 ounce cup. There's something way more powerful doing it that way than adding your favorite juice to a greens powder that was harvested in some foreign place and turned into a powder. There just is. Pick it off the tree. This is something that the Sprouters love to do. You've seen the Sprouters. They're always clamoring to the health food stores in the name of getting that mat of wheatgrass that the health food store buys its stuff from. But there are hardcore Sprouters that would never do that. They're going to grow it themselves. They're going to assay the soil. They're going to make sure everything is super clean. And so on and so forth. There's no end to this. As I said, the Sprouters are grassroots people. The Sprouters are people who are going to do it out of their backyard, who are going to do it out of the farm, who are going to go to the farm down the street and get it from there. These are like tribes. That's why they have kind of this esoteric, kind of cultish way about them. It's not that they're a cult at all. It's that they understand when you go grassroots on a food, meaning you make the food, you harvest the food, you go down the street to where the food grows and tell the person, go into your yard, cut me a mat of what you grow. I'm taking it home, putting it in something I turn by hand. You know, like the way the Amish do it? Want the best food in the world? Go to the Amish farms. Watch what they do. They haven't changed in a long time. The Sprouters are in that genre. And when they put the wheatgrass in, again, the catabolism, the breakdown of toxic tissue that infusions of wheatgrass will provide the cachexic person, the sickly person, are beyond our understanding. The cereal grasses, wheatgrass, barley grass, oat grass, just like the chlorellas, the spirulinas, the algae derivatives, so on and so forth, are the superfoods. We don't understand. They are so close to sunlight. If there is, in fact, and I cite one of my former shows on the photons and the leaves and all that photosynthetic process that we marvel at and have no understanding of, the nuclear bomb of the leaf, trapping the power of the sun through a photosynthetic process and living and growing 100-foot oak trees that are 400 years old, living off water and the sun. Are you kidding me? I don't know about you, but killing a tree, above all, killing a tree, that's what gets me. Personally, so forget my personal, but killing a tree, that hurts, man. When you understand what those 100-foot things do, maple trees, oak trees, and we're doing it everywhere. But what's in wheatgrass is so close to the photosynthetic process of the tree. In other words, the electrical power of a leaf and the photosynthetic process we marvel at, and the wheatgrass juice you drink are closely aligned. And that is why there's some spooky electromagnetic component. It's bigger than the concentration of vitamin, mineral, phytonutrient in these plants. Mark my words, mark the words of any, mark the clinical experience of the people who use these things. And you will be persuaded, compelled, overwhelmed with the sense that there's truth here. So what do the sprouters do? They capitalize on the greens. They become fanatical. And what does the combination of sprouts and foods like wheatgrass, collectively speaking, do to a diseased body? It forces a purging of all the garbage. It forces an inflammatory process that demands a reconfiguration of the molecular chemistry of the cell, of the intercellular space. It is like the electromagnetic wand from God. It is beyond our biochemical understanding, which is the problem for Clement, because you can witness things and you can't explain them, and our Western world does not accept that. In addition to which, one of the tenets of a healing is that you have to have the consciousness to receive a healing. Really, if I took the time to open a school to bring together young healers, doctors, etc., the premise would be not all are going to heal because there's a required consciousness. And if you're worth your salt as a doctor, you look for that consciousness in people. I don't mean I'm into holistic medicine. I mean something much deeper than that. There is a receptivity. There is a light bulb within that can receive the comeuppances of a healing, that can embrace the transitions that are required for a healing. And a lot of people don't have that. And that's the reality of it. And that mires the science. That screws up the science. Science doesn't want to honor that. A clone and a highly conscious man are the same thing. There's no difference. There's no difference between a thick-headed, desensitized clone and a highly sensitized, highly conscious person. It's even anti-American to say that. The truth is we're not all the same. That is the truth. Although we may be, although we may have the inalienable right to receive the same opportunities, we all don't receive them the same way, with the same depth. And so you have to understand that when you talk about something as electromagnetic as sprouting, you have to have a consciousness to receive that for it to galvanize the body towards a healing. But in the sense of the science, what's changing is there's a intense detoxification. You have ignited the catabolic process within your body systemically. And what does that mean to a diseased organ? It means kiss your waste material goodbye. Your dead cells, your dying cells, they're going to get scraped clean out of the organ. And that's what a sprouter's existence does. The genius of it is, it's done with respect to not crossing another line into starvation. So it's like a modified fast, but it's a lifestyle. Huge genius in that. Huge genius. Now, in contrast to the ketogenic animal protein low carb existence, by the way, whether you're a sprouter or you're a paleo type, guess what? You're both regulating your blood sugar wondrously. You go in at the blood, hit the blood sugars of many a sprouter. And by virtue of the foods they're eating, the glycemic index is more than low enough to keep your blood glucose ranges under 100. It's really not a lot different. Now, the McDougalites, these starch people, I don't know what to say about that. I don't even want to get into it. I don't deny anybody, including McDougal, his claims. But I don't get it at all. But just sticking to the sprouters and looking at them in contrast to the paleo types, the ketogenic types. Again, if you're new to this, paleo will not have you do dairy. The guy that really wrote the book, Lauren Cordon, whatever, he had this thing about dairy, probably partly justified, that the ketogenic Weston Price types would never deny people dairy. In my clinical experience, it's always person to person. But how do you make a blanket statement against raw milk and raw cream and raw butter? Lots of people I know personally have saved their lives on raw dairy. Literally saved their lives. Agnes von der Plunitz of the Primal Diet, he was no joker. I knew Agnes. Agnes helped heal serious disease with it himself and others. And it was contingent on raw dairy. And going back 500 years ago, 600 years ago, 700 years ago, going back 300 years ago, going back 200 years ago. Go tell a healthy Scotsman a couple of hundred years ago not to milk his cow. How do you come across and make a blanket statement like that? Yes, justified on the paleo side that much of our milk is toxic today. And that rather than succumb to the toxicities, don't do the dairy. That can be argued. But dogmatically across the board to deny people Amish dairy and dairy assayed, I mean people with their own goats or cows, farms where you have the freedom to actually assay the dairy, that's going too far to deny people that. Some people need it. But here's my point. If you're contrasting the sprouting genre with the paleo, if you really look at the carbs taken on both sides, they're both keeping their blood sugars very low. What's the difference? The difference is, and here's the key, if in fact you are at that phase where mass anabolism is called for, meaning to pull yourself out of your present state of disarray, you need a leap in the synthesis direction and not catabolism. You may enjoy a phase of synthesis, and it just may be you need to hit the paleo-esque type of approach. If you're cachexic, if you're falling apart, if you're emaciated, if you have no energy, if you can't move, if your life has been taken away, to build your electrical force may require a catabolic process. Despite the fact that you're emaciated, you may need to throw off poison to the degree that a sprouting lifestyle would initiate. Or it may be critical for you to jumpstart yourself to synthesis on a more meat-oriented diet. And how do you know who you are? Well, the first thing you need to do is understand that all the choices you make along the way should never limit you to one genre of food. You don't have to become religious about being a sprouter, and you don't have to become religious about being ketogenic. What you have to understand is that your course through the labyrinth of disease is based upon enhancing your attunement to what your body is telling you. And that is all I can give you today. You have to let that sink into yourself. And whether you start sprouting and jump to a ketogenic existence and go back to sprouting, the choice is in attuning yourself to you. And that's what we call a healing journey. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. If you are lost in the labyrinth of health concern, no matter what it is, 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. You're thinking of food now. You're germinating for the next month till the first of the year. Imagine if you were a little birdie. You could go into the automobiles of every person on January 2nd. How many faces would be happy? How many faces would look pensive? The new year is coming. And, you know, as a doctor, one of the advantages is you get to watch people at all walks of life, at all levels of health. And in the end, at a much younger age, because of your position as a doctor, you get to see what it's like at the end. You get to really see how the pieces add up. And you become assured that the one thing people regret in the end is what they didn't go for. That they had a potential that didn't come to fruition. That they didn't look at every day like, what do I have to lose? I'm going to do this. That they didn't live in fear. These things become so clear at the end. You see, wisdom dictates they have to become clear in the beginning. Good socialization of your children means they meet life with a, I can do anything I want to do, and I'm going to take the risk. I'm going to get it done. I'm going to be full in my life and not live in fear of the consequences. And not enough people do that. And that's what the new year is supposed to be about. A commitment to take that leap that requires faith and all the virtues. And if you're ill, the only thing in the way of a healing for an ill person is that leap across the chasm of fear. When people heal, anyone I've ever seen heal always looks at it like, what was I afraid of? In the end, the journey is pleasant. At the beginning, the journey is like looking at the devil, because you're going to meet your own demons. These foods, wheatgrass, sprouts, foods of high electrical content, these modified fasting regimens that we've talked about today, bring you to you. There's a you in there that's delusional because it thinks it's looking at the devil of healing and it's really looking at the angel of health. The only thing we're supposed to fear in a healing is our delusion, because the truth is it gets better when you do it. So this year, do it. 714-850-1007. I have nothing more to say to you today. God bless you. We're going to end a little early. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.